A story of corruption, panic, and dire economic consequences. Afghanistan's acting central bank governor, who fled the country, tells us about what happened in the days leading up to the Taliban's takeover. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. As Taliban militants over the weekend closed in on Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, hundreds of civilians and diplomats descended on the city's airport, desperate to catch a flight out. Acting Central Bank Governor Ajmal Ahmadi was one of those people with a ticket for a Sunday night Afghanistan Com Air flight. But before he could board, the floor, as he put it, fell out of the already tenuous political situation in the country.
Over just the course of 3 days preceded to the fall of Kabul, I had continued my work on both Saturday and the morning of Sunday until I arrived in the airport. And between my arrival in the afternoon at the airport, the city fell by that evening.
At that point, there were still commercial aircraft on the tarmac at Kabul Airport, but chaotic scenes which would come to symbolize this crisis were just about to unfold.
I think the news hit at around 4 p.m. that the president himself had left the country. And I think at that point, line of command and other controls were lifted. And then everyone began storming the remaining presumed flight out of the country, a Cam Air flight, which I had received a ticket for at the last minute. But when we boarded that plane, you know, everyone from the canceled flights had also tried to board. So at that point, it became chaotic. And it became apparent to me that that flight probably would not leave. So we left, went on the tarmac. And at this point, there was the scenes that you see at the airport where there's hundreds of people on the ground. It was a surreal experience. Helicopters were taking off. There was a military aircraft that was taking off. There was another military plane on the tarmac. And so we approached this military aircraft, and there were large numbers of people rushing towards that airplane trying to get on board. My friends and colleagues were able to push me on board. It was an unfortunate but surreal experience.
His speed to get out of the country echoes the dizzying pace of the Taliban's takeover, something that seemed to catch everyone off guard, even perhaps U.S. President Joe Biden.
The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated. So what's happened? Afghanistan political leaders gave up and fled the country. The Afghan military collapsed, sometime without trying to fight. If anything, the developments of the past week reinforced that ending U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan now was the right decision.
President Biden spoke to the American people on Monday. Did you watch that speech? And if so, what are your thoughts?
I think most Afghans would say we would have hoped for a different decision. And if that decision was taken by the White House, it is, of course, their own prerogative, but that perhaps there could have been a longer timeline to implement that decision.
He asserted that the Afghan military and government didn't fight for themselves or for their country while the Taliban was trying to take control.
Let me say, I would have a different opinion. I wouldn't qualify this as a military victory. I qualified it as perhaps an intelligence or a victory where they were able to convince or make deals to get people to surrender.
The U.S. exit clearly hastened the collapse of the Afghan government. But how much blame should Ajmal Ahmadi and other leadership figures take for failing to build a stronger Afghanistan? Corruption's been ripe throughout the past 20 years. So how much impact did that have?
There was significant amounts of corruption in the Afghan government. You cannot deny that. That is true. The corruption that was there was systemic. So there was significant focus on trying to reduce it. But there were challenges in trying to actually get corruption down to levels that I think would have improved the situation. Was it the only or major contributing factor? I think it was a major factor. But I think also the framework that Ambassador Khalilzad negotiated, which excluded the Afghan government, contributed to the delegitimization. And I think it was some part of the Afghan failures handling corruption and improving their execution of programs. I think you can count issues and problems on both sides.
International institutions have warned corruption inside Afghanistan's government was one of the biggest obstacles for the economy. But Mr. Ahmadi says there are other factors now that are likely to further destabilize the already fragile situation. He said Afghanistan has been reliant on shipments of physical U.S. dollars every few weeks, but on Friday, he received a call such deliveries would stop. One had been expected, he said, Sunday, the day Kabul ended up falling to the Taliban. A day before, banks, he said, placed large bids for U.S. currency as consumer withdrawals accelerated. So, could Mr. Ahmadi and his team have done more to bring stability to the system? And what happens now?
I think the economic situation will deteriorate. We were able to maintain macroeconomic stability even as provinces were falling. But there's a number of factors that I think are going to lead to a worsening of the situation. We have a large number of international reserves, but I would expect that the U.S. government would freeze those assets for the current time. So that's going to cause a shortage of foreign currency, which can be utilized. I would expect donor flows to significantly decline over the next few months. And that's going to cause pressure on the currency to depreciate. And that's in turn going to lead to higher inflation, pressure on the banking sector, and likely increases in poverty rates.
Do you think there was anything you could have done to help prepare not just the country, but the economy for what we've seen happen over the last week or so?
I think from the central bank side, we tried to do all we can. We were able to maintain the depreciation of the currency at only low single digits, approximately 4 or 5%, even as provinces were falling. The banking sector remained healthy. There was sufficient liquidity in the market. And so from the central bank side, we were able to manage the situation quite well. And we made sure that as provinces fell, that our vaults and the money that we held in provinces were secure. So I'm proud of the central bank and the staff who managed the difficult situation. It was more a politics and security issue rather than a macroeconomic failure.
Do you regret leaving at all?
I don't think I myself would have been involved in the new government, and I don't think that they would likely have wanted me in that new government, but I think I'm happy to be with my family.
Now outside the country in an undisclosed location, what does Mr. Ahmadi hope for the future of the country?
I hope there is peace in Afghanistan. I hope the Taliban do abide by their words and their commitments to not go after former government employees. I hope the progress of the past 20 years, they've made allusions that women will be allowed to go to school and work. I hope those promises are kept. And I hope that there's a way that we can improve the Afghan economy, because at this stage, poverty rates are high. And at the end of the day, it's the poor people who are going to be the worst affected by this ongoing conflict moving forward.
Ajmal Ahmadi, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Well, now G7 leaders will hold a virtual meeting next week to work out a common strategy on Afghanistan. Meanwhile, reports today indicate senior Taliban leaders will arrive in Kabul as the group looks to consolidate power. Middle-ranking leaders are also holding talks on formation of a new government with Afghan politicians from the previous administration. For the very latest, head to marketplace.org, where we'll continue to follow this story as it unfolds. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.